If you'll turn to Hebrews 11:7, we continue our journey through this great chapter of Hebrews 11, which teaches us how to hang on in life. The basic exhortation of the sections found in chapter 10, verse 36, where the writer, after talking about some of the tribulations and troubles that the readers were facing, says, you need endurance, you need perseverance, you need to learn how to last out and hang on. And we've gotten down now to verse 7. Last week we looked at what it means from verse 6 to believe that God is and that He is a rewarder. And now in verse 7 we've got a concrete example of what verse 6 is talking about. By faith Noah, being divinely warned of God of things not seen yet, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. I hope you're taking notice of how these verses are all connected to one another. There's threads that run through each of them that holds them together. For instance, in verse 1, we're told that faith is the evidence of things not seen. And then here in verse 7, Noah was warned by God of things not seen as yet. In verse 3, the things that are seen were made from things not seen. God's warning concerns something nobody had ever seen. In verse 6, he who comes to God. The first time the word come is used in the Bible is in connection with Noah, where in Genesis chapter 7, verse 1, the ark being completed, God says, come into the ark. And then also, verse 6, God is a rewarder. And verse 7 is going to show us one of the ways in which God rewards people of faith. In the case of Noah, it was by the saving of his house and him becoming an heir of the righteousness, which is by faith. Noah is a concrete example of how God deals with men. He rewards those who seek Him. That's verse 6. But He takes revenge on those who don't. In the destruction of the old world that occurred in the time of Noah by the flood, God was expressing His displeasure with sin. But in the saving of Noah, the preservation of Noah, God was showing how He blesses those who do come to Him and who seeks Him. Peter makes use of Noah in both of his epistles. In his first epistle, chapter 3, verse 21, Peter stresses the salvation of Noah and likens it to ours in showing how we are saved by water. God, there was a sense in which God saved Noah by water. God used that same water to destroy the old world. And in 2 Peter chapter 3, Peter talks about the destruction of the world in the time of Noah. Used water to both destroy and to save. And so Noah is a seminal figure in the Bible. And there are three points from verse 7 that I see made that I'll try to unpack for you this morning. They are God's warning, the warning, and then the effect, and then the consequences. God gave Noah a warning that had a certain effect on him, which resulted in certain consequences. So that will be our lesson, 3 points this morning. Before getting to the first point, let me take a sidestep to talk about something you may have wondered about, others have written about, debated about, preached on, and that is whether or not Noah was saved from destruction simply by what he did. Now, Ephesians 2 says, we are not saved by works of righteousness which we have done. But you read the story of Noah, and it seems he was saved from the flood, from being drowned, by something that he did. He built an ark. Now, are we saved by the things that we do, or are we saved by God? And the answer is both. We are saved by things we do, but that doesn't mean that in the doing of them, we are saved eternally. We're saved ultimately by God. Let me illustrate this with Noah. Noah was saved by building a boat and getting on it. Do you think the ark was the only boat in the world at that time? What happened to all the other boats? The job of a boat is to float. And if you're in a boat, the water's no threat because the boat will keep you afloat. Were there any other boats in the world at the time of Noah? What happened to them? Why didn't they float? And why was it Noah's was the only boat that floated and kept him and his family safe? I'll tell you why. It was God's grace. The storm unleashed at the time of the flood, the rainfall and everything else, destroyed all the other boats. You know, boats can be destroyed in storms. My dad, at the end of World War II, was sent to Japan with his battalion as temporary occupation forces. They were in the Philippines. They sailed to Japan, and something happened. Dad's group of ships sailed right into something that a lot of ink has been written, used, writing about. There was a typhoon, a divine wind, a kamikaze, that hit that area. And it destroyed a bunch of boats. Dad said the boat he was on one minute, the ship next to you is 100 feet above you, next second is 100 feet below you in that storm. A lot of boats were destroyed in that storm. And that word divine wind, kamikaze, came from an historical event in the history of Japan where a Chinese fleet had sailed to invade Japan and all the boats were destroyed in a storm. Noah's was the only boat that made it through. And that was by God's grace. Had he not built the ark, of course, nobody believes he would have been saved. But simply in building the ark, it took more. It took the grace of God, rewarding someone who sought him by faith. Now, in verse 5, we talked a couple of weeks ago about Enoch. Enoch was translated. When we think of Enoch, we think of him up in the sky, going to heaven. But when we think of Noah, we think of Noah down below in the storm. As I just said, storms can be devastating to naval vessels. Matthew 7, Christ talked about two men who built houses. One built on rock, the other built on sand, but both were hit by a storm. And only the house built on rock survived. Only the ship that sails by faith can survive the storms of life. So, with that said, let's talk about the warning that God gave Noah. And it's right in the front part of the verse. You know, fancy restaurants put the menu outside. You know, you're walking down the sidewalk trying to decide where to eat and you go by restaurant. And you don't have to go into a fancy restaurant because they've got the menu posted outside. But at Ott's in Rantoul, you're going to have to go inside if you're going to see what's on the menu. You know, that's what the cheaper restaurants do. But in verse 7, the menu is right out front here. By faith, Noah being divinely warned by God of things not seen as yet. Now, in Genesis 4, we read about Abel and worship. In Genesis 5, we read about Enoch and walking by faith. In Genesis 6, we read about Noah and working by faith. Genesis 6:14, God has warned Noah. He's told him a flood is coming. But in verse 14, he gives Noah a way of escape. He tells him to build a boat, to build an ark. And in verse 15, he says, make sure you build this thing exactly like I tell you. You follow my blueprint because destruction is coming. There's a day coming when Jesus is going to be revealed in flaming fire, taking vengeance on them who know not God. Peter says, 2 Peter 3:10, that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. Just like in the days of Noah, Christ said. People will be going about their business And the next thing they know, the rain starts falling, and it falls like no one had ever seen before. And only one man was ready because of a warning that God gave him. And so here's what the warning involved. A worldwide flood. That's what God revealed. And when Noah got that warning, he didn't argue with God. He didn't say, now nothing like that's ever happened around here. He didn't say nature is incapable of flooding the entire world. He simply believed God's warning. A couple of months ago, who would have believed the meteorologist who said that there's going to be a flood in which the river, the Guadalupe River down in Kerrville, is going to rise over 2 feet in 45 minutes. Who would have believed that? I've never seen anything like that. Almost a foot a minute, a river going up? No. But what about going up above the highest mountains? A flood that covers the mountains. Never happened. Not only that, but the one who survives builds a boat with no rudder, no sails, no steering wheel, and he's a landlubber. He's not a sailor. He's not merchant marine. You know what the word landlubber means? I'll give you a translation. I think it's an acceptable translation of what the word landlubber means. Gilligan. You know, an inept, inexperienced, unsavvy sailor. What are the odds of a boat, I don't care how big it is, without rudder, mast, steering wheel, manned by a landlubber surviving? I tell you what they are. They are zip. But by faith, Noah believed, and he found out God could be counted on. Let God be true and every man a liar. That was Noah's attitude. And that produced two effects in him. He got this warning. And that did two things. Number one, it caused him to fear. God warned him and Noah moved with fear. The word emotion, fear is an emotion. And an emotion is like this. You've got a car capable of getting you anywhere you want to go. You get in the car, you turn the key, and the motor starts. It's humming. It's ready to go. But if you're going to go anywhere, you've got to shift from park to drive. You've got to go from P to D on the gear shift column there. You've got to move it into motion. D indicates motion. P, park, doesn't. That's what emotions do within us. God tells us to do something. The first thing that should happen is that gears shift in us. And the gear may shift into joy. The gear may shift into what am I talking about? The gear may shift into action. The gear may shift into motion. But that's what's got to happen. And that's what happened with Noah. Take the E off emotion. You got motion. Emotions are meant to put us in motion. And if we hear the preaching of the Word of God and don't respond in some emotional way, chances are what we've heard is not going to be of any help to us. Not going to make any change in us. So Noah moved with, the American Standard says, godly fear, prepared an ark. He got somewhere. The emotion of fear allowed him to get somewhere. The preparation of an ark. And just think about all that means. You know, sometimes fear makes you stop. Fear can paralyze you. Godly fear makes you start. It puts you in motion. And it put Noah in motion to build an ark. And I think that fits in exactly with what the writer's talking about in chapter 10 when he says, you have need of endurance. Genesis 6:22 says that Noah did all according to what God commanded him. Now, what was involved in that? Did Noah go down to the Home Depot and put in an order for 1 million cubic feet of lumber? Did he go down to Lowe's and buy all the nails, all the tools that he needed? No, he didn't do anything like that. To build the ark, 450 feet long, somebody had to chop down some trees. Somebody had to plane those trees, cut them into workable lengths of lumber. And somebody had to make the nails, and somebody had to get all the equipment lined together. I have no idea how many years it took to build that ark. A lot of people think it took 120 years. The Bible does not say that. The Bible does not say he spent 120 years building the ark, but I bet he spent more than a month building it. And to undertake a project like that, it's like that family out in South Dakota there, carving Crazy Horse on that mountain. They've been at that for 50, 60 years. The father of the family was one of the carvers of Mount Rushmore back in the 30s. And not long after they finished Mount Rushmore, he gets this mountain presented him from the Indians because he's going to carve Crazy Horse. They've been doing that longer than I've been alive. Now, I'll tell you what I guess about that. Has anybody here seen Crazy Horse? My guess is they could have carved Crazy Horse a lot faster if they wanted, but they wouldn't have made as much money. Because if you want to get in there and get up close and look at it, you got to pay them money to do that. So that's become their income. And it's probably going to be a long time before that family ever finishes that carving. But to build the ark, that had to take a tremendous amount of time, and they had to endure. They had to persevere. And they're an example of the patience that we have by faith. So there were two effects that resulted from the warning. An emotional effect and an actional, a volitional effect. God's warning moved Noah's emotions into gear. And being in gear, they started building something. Now, what are the three consequences that resulted from all of this? Noah was warned, he was moved, he prepared. And there were three consequences. There was a consequence for his family, there was a consequence for his society, there was a consequence for himself. The consequence for his family was that he saved his family. I don't know about you, but I can tell you that there's no one I pray for more than my children and grandchildren. Now, I pray for all of you, but not as much as I pray for my kids and my grandchildren. And if I can only pick 9 people out of all the world, there were 8 saved on the ark. If I could only pick 9, my children and grandchildren would be the 9 I'd pick. To be able to save your family, there's nothing much better than that. There's nothing much worse than losing your family. And that brings terrible hurt and sorrow to families where children are lost. But to save your family, look over at verse 23 of chapter 11, where we're introduced to Moses. Verse 23, by Moses, by faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. And that's talking about Amram and Jochebed, Moses' parents. They weren't anybody. They weren't big shots. They were dirt poor, brick-making slaves. But their son was one of the most famous individuals in history. Now, how did he come to have the kind of faith that he had? Verse 27 says, by faith Moses forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Noah feared and did something. Moses did something because he didn't fear. Moses did not have the cowardly, paralyzing fear that's described in Revelation 21 as being cast into the lake of fire. Noah and Moses both had the godly awe and reverence and respect that caused them to do something. And Moses did something because verse 23 of what he saw in his parents. Amram and Jochebed, by faith, were not afraid of the king's commandment, and they saved their child. And verse 27, Moses walks out of Egypt because he had respect unto God's reward, the recompense and reward of what was coming, because he wasn't afraid. You want to raise a child not afraid of the peer pressure they're going to be subjected to in this world, they better see a parent who's not caving in to the peer pressure that parents face in this world. Like father, like son. That's what faith can do. It can enable us to save our children. Secondly, Noah's faith had an effect on his society by the which he condemned the world. Now, how did Noah condemn the world? Peter tells us Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Maybe Noah got up and told all of his friends and neighbors, if you don't get on this ark, you're going to hell. Maybe that's what he said. And if he said that, he'd been speaking the truth, and he'd been pronouncing a judgment about them. I don't know if he said that. But I'll tell you a way by which all of us condemn the world. We condemn it by doing the right thing. When you set a godly example in front of worldly people, by what you do, not by what you say, but by your actions, which speak louder than words, you are condemning those who don't live like you do in your godliness. And if you want a verse that teaches that, let me take you back to Matthew chapter 12, verse 41 and 42. Here's what Christ says. The men of Nineveh will rise up in the judgment with this generation and condemn it because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And indeed, a greater than Jonah is here. The queen of the south will rise up in the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And indeed, a greater than Solomon is here. Nineveh and the Queen of Sheba stood condemning the generation to which Jesus came because the city repented and the Queen of Sheba sought out the truth. And that's how we condemn the world, simply by doing the right thing. We're making a statement. We're passing judgment on our friends and neighbors who are not doing the right thing. And thirdly, Noah's faith not only had an effect upon his family and his society, it had an effect upon himself. He became an heir of the righteousness which is by faith. Now, everybody here understands what it means to be an heir. It means to get something you didn't earn. Often it means to get something you didn't deserve. And that's what our salvation is. It's something we get by faith, not because we've earned it or worked for it or anything like that. We get it because God rewards faith. Hebrews 11:6. I've got a good friend in Champaign. He and his wife never had any children, but they've got a lot of money. And he's told me about how much they've left their nephew and niece. They've got a nephew and niece, and in their will, they're leaving them a lot of money. He's told me that a couple of times. Each time after he's told me how much they're leaving, he's complained that the nephew and niece never come around to see him. They'll be in town, they'll find out they've been in town, but they never stop by to see him. And that's starting to irritate him a little bit. His nephew and niece know that they're in the will. He says, you'd think they'd have a little bit of appreciation and come around and visit with us, just stop in to say, oh, no, they never do that. And it's making him rethink whether his nephew and niece ought to be in the will. God will do the same. There's a will in heaven called the Book of Life. And when you came to Christ by faith, your name was added to that will. But if you lose your faith and lapse into unbelief and disobedience, if you lose your love for Christ, you can have your name taken out of that book. And that's something you don't want to happen. We want our names in the book. And by faith, they can be there. The story told about Joan of Arc, who, because of her service to France, asked that her hometown of Domremy, France, not have to pay taxes. And the French king said, okay, your town doesn't have to pay taxes anymore. And for 100 years or better, the town of Domremy didn't have to pay any taxes. In the state books, when you looked up how much tax each town owed to the crown, you'd come to the page, at the top says Domremy, and it's got all the taxes listed there that the town was supposed to pay, but written across the page in red ink are the words, free for the maid's sake. The maid being Joan of Arc. Free. The town's free from paying taxes for the maid's sake. And across that book in heaven, the Book of Life, with all the names who are the heirs of righteousness, across is written these words, free for the Son's sake. Forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. We can have that by faith.